Alrighty.
Let's do this.
Let's do this.
I'm Waffo, and joined with me is Ranza and Mitch. This is the CubeCast podcast, where they don't think it be like it is, but it do. Today is April 9, 2016, and how's everyone doing today?
I'm doing all right. That was an interesting intro. Like, usually you start off with, welcome to the CubeCast podcast, but this is, you're changing it up. What's the meaning of this?
Dude, we need to evolve to fit the needs of our listeners. Our loyal four listeners.
Who, us three and Corin? Probably... I mean, speaking of Corin, what we have planned today for this episode is Corin Puzzle, who designed the 22x22x22 world record largest order cubic twisty puzzle. But first, some housekeeping.
Right, so we had planned an episode with speed cubing prodigy from Hawaii, Michael Humuhumunukunuku Apua'a. Unfortunately, he has gotten a little bit of sickness due to him trying to adjust to our climate here in the northeast region of the United States. He is hanging out with the people from the cubicle. As such, he's in New York. So, unfortunately, he could not be on today. But other than that, we do have one of our actual team members got a recent unofficial world record, didn't they?
Yeah, our Tom Nelson, who produces our the music that you just heard, as well as the art for our website, so he does all the logoing and stuff, he set a 7x7 blindfolded, you know, unofficial world record of 19 minutes, 41.42 seconds, with a memo of about 8 minutes 5, execution about 11:35. The speed-solving thread with the video in it is in the show notes. You can go ahead and watch it if you'd like. Wow, it's just... That's crazy, because Roman Strakov had all the other giant blind unofficial world records, and then Tom comes along and, you know, ruins his streak.
Oh, man, you know, it's really funny. I really forgot that Tom does big blind and blind in general.
Yeah, I remember when we first got to talking with him, I remember he liked doing FMC, because I've seen him do the... weekly FMC, the David Adams weekly FMC a few times. But yeah, when I saw this, I was like, wait, whoa.
Yeah, what? Exactly.
He's really good at this.
Yeah, it's crazy. But it looks like we actually have a collective talent within the CubeCast team, which is absolutely great.
Yeah.
So.
And then there's Brandon.
There's Brandon, there's you who doesn't do blind, and then Tom who does blind. So it all kind of all adds up.
Yeah. We all add up to one well-rounded cuber. All 10 of us. All 10 of us summed together for one well-rounded cuber. Not best in the world by any stretch of the imagination, but at least somebody who's well-rounded. So the next part of housekeeping is merchandise. So last episode we said we were going to try getting merchandise ready. Well, it's not ready. Yeah, I took the back burner because we were working on some other stuff. But merchandise, I just chatted with our associated peoples, and merchandise will be a thing very soon, hopefully by next episode. So stay tuned for that. If you have ideas for things that we can, you know, produce, that's going to be greatly appreciated. But we have an idea. We're going to come out with a couple shirts first. After that, we'll see what it can be, because it will do like it be like it is, but it do.
Absolutely. I agree 100% with that. And without further ado, let's bring in our guest of honor today.
So the designer of the 22x22x22 cubic twisty puzzle, largest order in the entire world, who's competed in all the events except for feet and clock, which I didn't know, we have Corin. Welcome, Corin.
Hello.
Ha!
Whoa.
I have actually competed in feet, but I DNF'd.
Oh, really? Oh, dang. I'll remove that from the show notes then, because that is actually wrong. So you just haven't competed in clock at all?
Yeah, that's the only event I haven't competed in.
I was actually half-heartedly expecting him to say, I was like, no, I also competed in that, but I also DNF'd. So I was like, well, so much for our goddamn research here.
Yeah.
We're so good at trying to extract information from people that we haven't talked to ever.
Yeah.
So Corin, tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from, your cubing experience, how you got started with cubing, and more importantly, how you got started designing puzzles.
Okay, so I'm from BC, Canada. I pretty much started designing puzzles pretty much at the same time I started cubing, and you know, I just like got a puzzle that I had for a while, and I just learned how to make it on the internet, or how to solve it on the internet, and then I very quickly got more interested in making puzzles as opposed to actually solving them, and the first puzzle mod I made was like an extended 3x3x4, and it's kind of strange because my parents' reaction to these things, like, I think it was the same reaction of like, oh wow, neat, that's really amazing, to the 3x3x4 as it was to like some of the bigger puzzles like 9x9 barrel and stuff. So yeah, it hasn't
really changed.
yeah, but like with the 3x3x4, it was like, oh, the top layer that I just glued pieces on doesn't turn. It's like, well, you know, still amazing when it's just gluing things on. And then with the 9x9, it's just like, oh, and it turns too, like every time. I was amazed.
That's really good.
It's actually really, really funny.
Yeah, so you're saying you're much more of a puzzle designer than a speed solver?
Yeah, I'd say, like, I pretty much started spending most of my time in cubing, just making puzzles and stuff, for the most part.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I noticed that you've been to a handful of competitions, and you're not actually half bad at a lot of events. I noticed that you're pretty good at Pyraminx. I think you're, like, 7th or 8th in Canada for the Pyraminx.
Yeah, something like that. I'm not sure. I don't know, Pyraminx,
he hasn't checked recently.
Yeah, I haven't. For Pyraminx, I just picked up the Pyraminx one day, and it just did, like, 1,000 solves, and I was sub-5. So, it just didn't... I barely did much with Pyraminx. I don't know why I'm... got decent at it.
Wow.
Oh, man. Yeah. I really wish I could pick up a puzzle and just do 1,000 solves and be decent at it already.
Yeah.
Jesus just, like, Christ. Three is hard.
A puzzle and just do 1,000 solves on it without, you know, not doing 1,000 solves.
Oh, man. Oh, going back to your, like, your, kind of how you started, like, you kind of did it hand-in-hand, you said, right? Like, puzzle building and speed solving?
Yeah,
the
like
standard pretty much stuff that most people make, right?
I made it down to like a minute in speed solving, and then just kind of gave up on that and started working on like a 3x3x4 extended. But I also like did things like make a 1x2x3 out of Legos and stuff, and that was pretty much
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh man, my first puzzle mod was like 2x2x6 out of 2 4x4s, which was really hard to like start with, my opinion. I wish I just like glued on some pieces.
Yeah.
I really wish I just glued some pieces.
Did it actually work? Was it successful?
Yeah, I have a video of it on YouTube.
Oh wow, I haven't been to your YouTube channel in a while. Except
yeah,
to see
you know why?
Doing, to see you no doing 4x4 parody.
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm good at, man. 4x4 parody.
Anyway, so we're going to bring up some questions from us, the hosts, as well as from our team and our wonderful listeners. So, Waffle, you had a few questions?
All right, so you basically mentioned that you were really kind of, you put yourself in a position where puzzle building appealed to you more. What is your driving force to create these puzzles? Is it like some form of insanity or even masochism?
I think it's probably insanity. Like, I get an idea for a puzzle, and then I just can't get it out of my head. Like, I just become really obsessive about it, and then I just have to try it, no matter how ridiculous it is.
Wow.
I mean, probably half of the puzzles I've ever tried have failed.
But at least you've tried them, so that's really interesting. What's... I guess I really want to ask you is, like, what's your process into building these things? Like, how do you kind of orient yourself, like, both time and budget-wise to put into like, making these puzzles a reality?
Well, like, for coming up with an idea, it's just, you know, it's pretty straightforward. It's like, okay, there's barrels, and I'll make a 9x9 barrel, and stuff like that, you know, just make a bigger one or something.
Mm-hmm.
For time and budget, I pretty much, like, I'm really all-or-nothing kind of person, so, I mean, I will spend, like, every minute of spare time that I have making a puzzle until it's done kind of thing, mm-hmm. so, yeah.
That's dedication.
Yeah, unless it's, like, the 22x22 or something that takes, you know, so long that it wouldn't be practical to do that, but, yeah, for scheduling and things, I just pretty much go all out.
Okay, cool. All right, so my next question was, you have a track record with speed cubing. Do you find, like, what about it is appealing to you rather than, you know, just saying, hey, I like doing this? Is that really it? You just say, hey, I like doing this?
Well, I mean, I really like how it gets my mind off things, you know? Like, at the end of the day, just do, like, a couple hundred 3x3 solves or something, just to kind of zone out, mm-hmm. I guess, a little bit. And you eventually get kind of fast doing that, so, yeah. I just like it kind of just as a stress relief.
Oh, okay,
so.
Yeah, cool.
I totally feel that. Yeah. I know that.
It's like, really funny because it's the opposite for me. Like, this is stress-inducing. Like, it's like, what am I supposed to do to get my mind free of trying to get faster at every single moment in time? I'm just kidding. I really don't care anymore.
Sure. Definitely.
I'm gonna go compete and get a 13 average now.
Hey, I'm gonna do that tomorrow. Anyway, Corin, what did it feel like to finish your 22x22 and have it, you know, not explode?
I was really nervous because, like, this whole time I had no idea if it was actually going to work. Like, if it was one thing, like, whether or not it would actually physically fit together, but whether or not, like, the turning would actually happen, like, if it could overcome that friction, it wouldn't catch so much. So it was, like, really nerve wracking. And then, like, when I finally started doing the first turns and stuff, it was, I don't know why, but, like, it didn't, like, the stress and stuff didn't really die down or anything. I was still, like, on edge, and then that just slowly went away weeks after it made it, so. I don't know, I wasn't, like, terribly relieved or anything.
Have you broken it in completely yet?
No, like.
Is it speed solving ready? Can you stagmat it?
No, it actually broke again, like, a little while after I made the video.
Oh no!
So I couldn't even have, like,
oh no, my Rubik's Cube!
Yeah, a piece broke on the inside, and I, like, woke up and just went to my room, and the puzzle was all, like, misshapen, and I knew that, like, something had broken in the inside, so I, like, taped it up completely so it wouldn't fall apart, and yeah, now it's just sitting here all taped up.
Oh no!
Like Rubik's,
and I found out,
no,
like, that if I peel off the tape, the stickers come off with it. So I don't want to untape it.
Oh
no! Oh god!
Oh
yeah!
Dude,
I'm
rest
just
in
like,
pieces.
I'll fix it eventually. I don't know. It's been a couple months, so we'll see.
That's actually really funny. I'm sorry for your loss, by the way, but. That's really funny. Mitch, you have a couple of questions?
Yeah, so the questions that I'm going to ask are more related to the engineering design process of how you make the puzzles and that type of thing. The first question is, do you use a 3D modeling software to make pieces in puzzles?
Yeah, I use SolidWorks. It's just pretty much the best way to make something that big, I guess. Yeah.
Okay, and the other question is, like, obviously, 3D printing, this is kind of on the same topic of the question, is you would use SolidWorks, and then you would 3D print just one particular part? Like, would you print one... I don't know. Okay, hold up, let me restart that. When you make the SolidWorks files, you make... you make one part, like you make the one corner, and then to get around cost, do you 3D print just that one corner, and then would you take a mold of each piece and then duplicate the molds? Is that how you go about making
that? No, that's not how I go about making it. What I did was I printed the whole thing. So, like, okay. Yeah, it kind of filament is relatively cheap. It's like the filament that went into that puzzle was probably about $75 to $100 worth of filament, and like casting material. I don't know why I cannot find casting material cheaply, so it would have cost way more to cast. So it was just a little more cost effective to print the whole thing, but way more time consuming.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I just thought that maybe somehow it would be like much more cost effective to like do multiple molds, but overall that would just take way much more time. And that's me thinking of like how Drusif like back in 2009 would make the puzzles, I guess.
Yeah. Well, now that you can like have 3D printers at your house and stuff, and just like consumer 3D printing has gone down so much that it's just more practical to print the whole thing at this point. Depending on the puzzle.
Yeah, definitely. And my next question is, can you explain how the core of the 22x22 works and how you came up with that design?
Right, so the core of the 22x22 is just a 4x4 that uses kind of a V-cube mechanism. And essentially, like, just the very inner X-centers are just the X-centers of the 4x4, and the corners are attached, or this, the corners of the 22x22 are the corners of that inner 4x4, and then same with the wing edges. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just like a design, kind of like the Sheng Xiao puzzles, where you have like an inner 3x3, so this is just an inner 4x4. So you don't actually have to have very many internal pieces, just the, 5x5 internal pieces instead of like a 23x23 internal pieces. So it's a mechanism which it's not really that practical. Like, I'm not going to lie, that was probably not the best way of doing it, but I had my heart set on having a 4x4 core, so yeah.
Wow, and it worked?
Yeah.
I mean,
for some time.
Yeah, for like intermittent periods of functionality.
Yeah. So our next question comes from our half-cast host, Pedro Miranda. Why did you pick an even-numbered cube for the world record, and aren't those much harder to do?
So, on the subject of even or odd, I was originally going for an even number, because I don't know why I picked 22, but I really just wanted to have a 22x22. And then I kind of came to that same conclusion. I'm like, okay, it would actually just be easier to have a 3x3 core and just make the puzzle in that way. But what I realized was kind of the way you need to print the middlemost edge would require printing it in two halves and then gluing those two halves together. And I actually didn't want to glue those two halves together, so I figured I'd just leave them split and then just add another layer.
Dang. I don't want to glue these two pieces together, so why not just add a layer? That's great.
Oh, well, there's 12 edges, man. It would be,
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was that lazy, seriously. And then it wound up being way more work in the end, but oh well.
But it happened, I guess. So the next few questions we have are from our listeners. We have one from Ben Christie. Do you have any tips for amateur puzzle design wannabes, like software and hardware and the like? You mentioned SolidWorks before. Yeah?
Yeah, SolidWorks isn't free, though. So if you wanted to like just get into it, you could do something like SketchUp. Like, I've made puzzles in SketchUp. It works fairly decent for something that's a little simpler. Like, if you wanted to do like extensions onto puzzles or something, or add some sort of mechanism like that. For hardware, I mean, if you're going to be designing puzzles on computers, you obviously need to get it 3D printed. So I just use RepRap 3D printers. They seem to work well, but they're really, really finicky. So you kind of have to know what you're doing to get anything usable out of them.
The good news is that you can, you know, repair rep wraps using rep wraps. So,
unless your rep wrap's not working.
Oh yeah.
Oh well, no.
It depends how many you have. As long as you have one working rep wrap that can reliably like repair another rep wrap, then you're gonna be fine. I know I had a friend. Yeah. He's still my friend, Nathaniel Knopf, who currently goes to MIT. He and his dad had a rep wrap, and they only had one, and it never worked for a long period of time. So it was really tough to maintain.
Yeah, they are quite a pain.
Okay, so I have two more questions. The first one is, how long did it take you to design the 22x22 in SolidWorks?
Okay, designing the 22x22 in SolidWorks, that took about, I'd say, total maybe like 15 hours. Because I went through, I went through many iterations. Because I had like a vision, but it was not, like, you have to kind of actually go out and make the model to see. And you might realize that, oh, okay, this piece gets cut off, the corners fall out or something. So you have to kind of continuously adjust that. And I was much more of a noob at SolidWorks at that time, so I didn't know a lot of the time-saving tricks that would have made that a lot easier. So it would probably have been, like, 5 hours if I did it now. But, yeah, there is a lot, just because there's over 100 unique pieces, so, yeah.
When you started on the project, did you start in an assembly, or did you... Well, obviously, you can't really start in an assembly, but did you start with a part, like, individual parts, and then put them in an assembly, or did you just start with one part and then kind of cut and like boss extrude and all that type of stuff to create the overall puzzle?
Well, the method that I used for making the model in SolidWorks was you start off with the cube, which is the same dimensions as the final product, and then you create one master sketch basically and revolve it around one of the axes, so that acts as all the cuts, so you make all the pieces at the same time. And then, yeah, it's just a matter of adding tolerances and stuff to each individual piece afterwards. But for the most part, all the pieces are made at the same time.
Okay. And my last question that's not really related to SolidWorks is, besides the 22x22, what is your favorite puzzle that you have designed?
I'd say my favorite puzzle is a puzzle which I haven't actually released yet. It was meant to be an April Fool's joke, but my printer broke completely, like, just before I finished it, so it wasn't in time. And essentially what is... Yeah. So I actually replaced the printer now, so I have a better one. But what it is, it's the 5x5 that... Or at least it looks like a 5x5. And it's actually made out of four individual, like, mini cuboids, which each cuboid is... each cubie is the same size as a regular 5x5 cubie. So it fractures apart into... a 3x3x5, a 2x2x5, and 2 3x2x5s. So it's essentially just a bunch of mini cuboids that kind of make it look like it's a 5x5 when they're all kind of put together. So it was kind of always a vision that I had for something like that. So yeah, it's probably the favorite one.
Ooh, that's pretty good. Well, I guess because you're printer broke, the joke's on you, but... You know, maybe next year if you'd like us to remove that from the episode so you can actually follow through with that, we totally can.
No, I'm too impatient to wait a year. I'll just, like, show it off in a video normally and just be like, hey, this is this trick puzzle, which, yeah.
Cool stuff. Well, you heard it here, folks. Look forward to Corin's new puzzle.
Yeah. Well, new four puzzles.
Four new puzzles in one. All right.
Yeah, four in one.
Really cool stuff.
All right, so our next listener question comes from Roy Lee. What are some regrets, if any, that you've had in your cubing career?
I'd say definitely a major regret was trying to make a 13x13. That was, like, the most disastrous of all projects I've ever taken on. So.
Oh, what's the story behind that?
Well, like, I traded a custom puzzle for an 11x11 at Worlds 2013, and then I had this 11x11, and I was like, oh man, I want to do something with it, because the stickers were all off, so I couldn't really solve it or anything. And then I had this, like, ridiculous idea of essentially, like, handcrafting two extra layers onto the 11x11 to make it into a 13x13. and I wasn't using 3D printing or anything, so it was casting, and it was just this, like, insane hand mod, which required, like, pretty much every piece to, you know, be split apart and built up and shaved down and stuff to make it happen, and I made all the pieces, kind of assembled it, and it was just so locked up, and it would just explode and stuff, and it never really worked out. And that took probably half as much time as the 22 by 22. Like, it was a ridiculous amount of time I spent on that project.
Oh, man.
Oh, no, my Rubik's Cube.
Our next listener question comes from Jad Virgi. Why did you use a cylindrical mechanism on the 22 by 22 and not a spherical one?
It pretty much came down to sort of space efficiency, I guess, or just mainly like optimization of how quickly you can print things on a rep wrap. So if you have more conical surfaces and rounded surfaces and stuff, you would need to use support material on every single piece, and or split them into two or more parts and then glue them together later on. And that wasn't really practical if you're going to make 2,500 plus pieces. So I used just the more square blocky design, just because I made it, with the square blocky design, you have minimal support material and it just prints really efficiently. So you can get down the time to make each piece to about like 3 minutes. Whereas if I was using more conical designs, it would take probably around like 10 to 15 minutes per piece, which is kind of the breaking point in between practical and not practical. So yeah.
What's the difference between cylindrical mechanisms and not and spherical mechanisms? Because I'm not quite sure what you're trying to say.
Well, so like if you look at each piece of the 22 by 22, it's essentially a rectangle with a little notch cut into it and then a little thing sticking out, kind of like the floating anchors, except like on the 17 by 17. But the floating anchors, they're like, I'm not sure if conical design or cylindrical design is exactly the right way to describe it, but basically like all of the cuts in the 22 by 22 are straight down into the puzzle, so it's all 90 degree angles, whereas on other puzzles, like any pretty much any mass produced puzzle, you have angled cuts going in, and those create more rounded surfaces and stuff that just can't be, they don't have any flat sides which you can lay down on a print bed for a 3D printer efficiently, so you would either have to split them or use a lot of support material.
All right. Well, then that covers all our listener questions. Now we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to have a news section talking about Tony Fisher's biggest 3x3, a new Teen Noodle release, and all the other stuff. So stay tuned.
Back. Oh gosh, what a strange commercial break we had there, Brandon.
I mean, yeah.
He's just confused because he hasn't recorded it yet.
I mean, yeah. All right, so now we're gonna talk some news with our guest Corin. The first topic of news we have is Tony Fisher's largest 3x3 Rubik's Cube. Some background on this: on February 12th, Tony Fisher posted a video on his channel, on his YouTube channel, of this giant 3x3. It's supposed to be 1.56 meters edge length, and he submitted an application to Guinness World Records on February 14th. It was accepted on the 29th of March. Official measurements were taken by a surveying company this past Tuesday, which was the 5th of April. This cube's been featured in the media in a very well-known UK newspaper called the Sunday Mirror. It was featured on Yahoo News. And this past Wednesday, there was a Japanese quiz show thing, as Tony put it, that was being filmed outside of his garage, outside of his shed, where he had this giant cube. So this is big news, pun definitely intended.
Boo.
Did you guys see this?
Boo. Bad. Bad.
This is
pun.
You can leave now.
Okay. Tone the hell down, Brandon, okay, with your puns, okay? This is utter punishment to us. Brandon left! He's booking a flight to New Jersey, and Brandon? He's gonna cap me.
No way.
Okay, I'm back. What are your guys' thoughts on giant cubes, and especially Korin? Like, how? Like, what are your thoughts on this giant behemoth of a puzzle?
It looks pretty impractical. Doesn't turn very well, but it looks cool.
I mean, yeah.
It's like a given.
It is what it is.
So yeah. Do you think what goes through, like, Tony's mind is the same as you? You just are insane?
I'd be surprised if it's the same brand of insanity, but it's probably still insanity.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
You do what it do?
That's pretty good.
On top of his giant cube, he also did a pretty funny April Fool's prank. That got a lot of people's attention. Want to talk about that, Brandon?
Yeah, he made.
I was so mad by that. I was like, "Oh, another lame April Fool's joke by Tony Fisher. Here we go." And then he's like, "Joke's on you, those who didn't believe." I'm like, "Oh,
you know what you're gonna get a lot of questions of? It's like, where are the magnets,
dude? How do magnets even work?
Apparently, there's still people that believe that Rubik's cubes are held together by magnets.
Oh yeah, I get that all the time.
Magnets make terrible puzzles.
I mean, I just think it was funny that, like, while it is fully, quote unquote, fully functional, it's like, it's not our usual idea of a twisty puzzle. So I don't know if I should count this.
I feel like it doesn't quite pass the old "can you shake it and it doesn't fall apart" standard, though.
That's actually a thing.
You know, when you're doing, like,
that's a good way
cuboids
of putting a standard.
Well, like, I mean, if you're doing, a cuboid that has, like, one axis that's way longer than the other, and you kind of, like, have it go out a little ways.
You said way
I
long.
I feel like the puzzle's
God damn it, Mitch!
The puzzle's a fail. If you shake it and it falls apart.
Moving on.
God damn it,
but
Mitch.
I was...
You can't do that!
I was skeptical because I was thinking, like, how in the world is that actually being held together, the 5x5x1? Because... I don't know, it's unsettling to me to have it being held together only with magnets, but...
I couldn't see any form of, like, mechanism off the sides of the pieces, so I was like, that's definitely magnets type of deal already, so... Too bad. Or, like, he could have done some CG magic. Who knows?
Like he did for that one puzzle, like, a really long time ago? Do you guys remember what I'm
talking
about? Yeah,
that's what I was trying to, like, reference. I don't exactly remember what the video was on.
I think it was a 12x12.
Okay. Yeah, well, like, I remember him doing some, like, CG magic, like, video editing magic, and I thought, like, oh, we could have done some video editing for this one as well. But who knows? Who cares?
All right, so the next topic on our news is the Miles Mess, which was a video by a video effects production company featuring somebody juggling 3 Rubik's Cubes and apparently solving them within 20 seconds. Of course, this has been shared across the internet and among the speed-solving community, or just the puzzle community in general. People know it's very, very fake because, you know, the most famous case of that actually happening is with Robbie Fernando, and it still takes him a few minutes. This is also mentioned on the Halfcast, so if you want to listen to their commentary on it, go ahead and go to cubecast.fm. You can listen to it there. What do you guys think about this Miles Mess video that was edited post filming, and what implications do you think that has on the future of the solving community, the puzzle community?
I think it's Mills Mess, not Miles Mess.
It's Mills Mess?
Yeah. I think I've heard Ravi Fernando say it before.
It is Mills Mess. I just can't read, apparently, and I can't, like, copy correctly. Sorry about that.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Opinions on the matter? Brandon?
I don't know. It seems to me like if a video production company can produce something like this, and I know that there are some solvers who are savvy enough to actually produce something like this. It makes me feel very uneasy because it detracts from the actual accomplishments of of some competitors who have worked really hard in order to actually do it for real. Because I know Ravi is just great at what he does, and he's one of the first people to do it. I think also Chris Olsen has done that. I can't remember if he's just solved. I know he's done the juggling two balls in one hand and doing OH. I remember seeing that, but I don't know if he's gotten quite to that level. But yeah, it makes me feel uneasy, because if that can be faked, then what other things in the future could be faked? Like, it kind of reminds me of, as you guys are mentioning, like the CGI, or the CG magic with Tony Fisher, or his 28x28x28, that was fake, that was actually very convincing at the time. Korn, I'm interested in...
Yeah, that scared me for a minute there.
Yeah, like, what are your thoughts on that? On things like the 28x28?
On the 28x...
Yeah.
Like, when I first heard that there was, like, a 28x28, I was, like, you know, almost finished the 22x22. I'm like, wow, there goes the world record. But then, and I was like, oh, okay, it's Tony Fisher, it's probably fake. And, I mean, it's clearly... I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It's kind of annoying because you get a lot of people who still believe that the 28x28 is real and is the biggest puzzle ever, but I don't know. If you really look, I mean, he makes videos that are like, oh yeah, it's fake. This is how it's done.
Yeah.
But I mean, it doesn't matter. It's not like it's clearly just done for fun. Like, there's no actual attempt to claim that this is a real thing, so... Whatever.
I mean, for all the people, I think on the original video, he still, I don't know if he changed the title or the description to see, like, how it was done, like, saying that it was a fake. Do you have people claiming that your 22x22 is fake or, like, isn't a world record or whatnot?
I've never had anybody say that it was fake, but I have had a lot of people say, like, oh, there's a 28x28x28, and I'm just like, oh, whatever.
Oh, okay.
But... Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty annoying.
Back to the topic at hand, with the whole, like, whatchamacallit, CGI stuff. I think it's perfectly cool, because people who are not gonna be, you know, are not part of the community will be attracted to the community, you know? It's a way to get people... Like, to get people to know the community as a whole, rather than deter from it. I don't think that it does too much damage to the community. Mm. Like, if people are going to be dumb and believe it, then people can be dumb and believe it.
It would have been kind of cool if they had done something CGI that, like, hasn't actually been done, though. You know?
Because yeah, there are people, I guess, I suppose.
There are people who have actually done it, you know, so why not do something... It's a cool idea, but is kind of impossible and needs CGI to do it. I mean, you don't need CGI to solve 3x3's juggling. It can be done, I think.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, coming back to what you were saying, it's like, I feel like that's kind of like a no press is bad press sort of argument, which I don't know if I really agree with. Is that something that we want to represent our community initially, like, because there's some people who are going to see that on the surface and then make an assumption that's just wrong. Do you think that's okay? Like, I don't know.
So what's wrong with, like, doing, like, I think of it as a type of, like, advertising.
Mm.
You know? What's wrong with making something look really cool to attract people into, like, knowing more about the community?
I don't know, because...
What's wrong to, like, yeah, it like over-exaggerates someone's, like, or, like, yeah, it could say, hey, someone's done this, but like 20 seconds and blah 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 blah, right? I'm not, like, crapping on Ravi whoever else has done it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, it's a really cool thing to get more people interested in cubing. We've already said this before, like, cubing is such a wide array of people, right? It's everyone who does things. So now we can say we have people who do CGI who are interested in cubing. Like, what's wrong with attracting more people into the community?
I don't know. I
if I could just say something.
Go for it.
Like, One thing, though, is, like, since juggling Rubik's Cubes, that is a real thing that people can do and stuff and solving.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you might get a lot of people who, like, are initially very excited by something like that, but then they find out it's fake, and then they in turn believe that it cannot be done at all when it actually can be, just because that one example mm-hmm. is fake. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there saying that it's fake, and, yeah, I don't know.
I suppose.
Yeah, it might be a bit of a deterrent.
I don't know. With videos like Robbie's, I think there's enough documentation with things like Robbie Solves. People aren't... That's not what people are going to see. People are going to see this video of this amazing thing being done and have that as the standard of, like, this is something amazing that happened. And if they hear that's fake, they might not think that it's fake, or they might not know how it was faked. And if people, for instance, link them to Robbie's video saying, this person actually did it, simply because of the time differential, I think that it still detracts from Robbie's accomplishments. And I don't know if that's what I want to represent our community from, like, a first point of entry. I'd rather have something like one of Felix Zumdegs' world record solves, or, you know, the 4.9 world record solve, or something more like that, as opposed to something that was faked and was not, it didn't come out that it was fake for a long time. It had millions and millions of people misled over a significant period of time. I don't know. Mitch, do you have any thoughts on this?
I don't know if you guys saw it, or if you guys had mm-hmm. just discussed it. I was away from the mic really fast, but, in the background, there was, I think they discussed this on the Halfcast, about how there was the, like, company logo or whatever.
Yeah, they did.
So, I think the entire thing was just a publicity stunt for them to get people to, like, see what they are capable of doing and maybe get, like, jobs.
I don't know.
It's not a direct target at the community or anything.
Oh, like, were we talking about the community? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it doesn't...
Yeah, of course.
I guess it kind of can hurt the community, because then people think that these very difficult tasks can be solved fairly simple, but... And then people go out and try it, and then they see that it's insanely hard, and then they get... They just don't want to do it then. And then cubing, like, I know a lot of people that are trying to say that solving the Rubik's Cube is not impossible, and you should definitely try doing it, but then when they see people doing these tasks... And then they try for themselves and see how impossible it is. Then they just give up.
Yeah, if solving the cube weren't enough of a mental barrier anyway. So, okay. So on that note, we're going to move to our next topic of T-Noodle. So T-Noodle 11.1 released, and the fewest moves world record mean by Linus Frusts that we talked about on a previous episode. Was rescinded. Actually, his 21 move solution, which was his first attempt, has now been changed to a DNF. So the official post about T-Noodle, you can see it on the WCA homepage at worldcubeassociation.org, by Laura Orndorff, and she said, the following change has been made since T-Noodle 0.10.0. So the color schemes of the Mega Mix and Square One have been changed to the ones that are widely used today. That was a long time coming. But more importantly, the second change since T-Noodle 10 was that the scramble generation process for fewest moves has been changed. Fewest moves scrambles are now longer, and the scramble sequence is no longer directly related to the puzzle state that they produce. In particular, all scramble sequences for fewest moves are padded with the moves R', U', F at the beginning and the end. The reason for this, what brought this to happen, was that we mentioned on the episode with Jeremy, that he brought to our attention, is that 11 moves from the solution were identical to moves on the inverse solution for that particular attempt. And originally, Sebastian Aru, who had the FMC world record mean, he was a delegate at the competition and accepted that solution from Linus, and the WCA board decided that this should be DNF'd because of the regulation E2E, which is the competitor solution must not be directly derived from any part of the scrambling algorithm. And Pedro Santos said, This means that the final solution cannot be related to the scramble, and it doesn't matter how that solution was achieved. It must be made clear that Linus's integrity is not being questioned, nor the fact that he may have found the solution by some way other than reversing the scramble. As somebody who does FMC, this is pretty pressing, because I know that some of the solutions that I've submitted, for instance, to the weekly David Adams, have had like three or four moves that shared moves with the scrambling algorithm. What are your guys' thoughts on this now DNF and this whole process of retroactively DNFing attempts and costing somebody a world record?
Just in general,
or in this case, and in general, yeah.
Okay, and like in the case of the actual, basically the result being DNF'd, it's kind of like, I don't know if it was like a thing where we saw it coming, but it was already expected. I think it was like almost like a year ago. I read something. I can't exactly remember. But some guy was doing FMC and most of his moves shared the inverse with a scramble. Mm-hmm. And then they did some magic in between and then it was solved. So it was kind of something that was going to eventually happen, in my opinion. But I don't think anyone expected it to show up as soon as it did.
Okay. Mitch?
I don't know very much about FMC, but I don't know. I think it might change how top FMC solvers are going to be, what their results might be, because I don't know if it for certain, but it might change the averages that they get, because now they're not going to be canceling out as many moves.
I mean,
do you guys agree with that?
I try my best not to use moves from the scramble, like poor portions of the scramble, to directly derive parts of my solution, because I know that's a big no-no. Corin, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I don't really know anything about FMC, so.
Oh, well, okay. Well,
great.
great topic to have with our guest who knows so much about FMC. I just thought it was something interesting to bring up, and yeah. Sorry.
The fact that I'm not too shocked about the decision. Retroactively remove it.
Yeah.
It's kind of something that, to be honest, I was expecting for quite some time, just not as soon as it did.
That padding the scrambles with R prime, U prime, F is gonna. Do you think that that's a reasonable change to be made? Because I think it is.
I'm trying to like come up with FMC solutions in my head to see what like it would do. I'm thinking it should be enough, but at the same time, I wouldn't hold my breath.
I definitely think that there could be some cases where inverting those moves at the start of your solution is just going to be the way that building the first block happens, or portion of a first
block. Yeah, absolutely.
Or first step, whatever you might have, because I know some people do EO first, and especially having an F move right there, that could happen. Anyway, so that's enough about that. Just something interesting. Next point in the news is that the speed-solving forums have upgraded to ZenForo from vBulletin. That was just a few days ago. What do you guys think about the new look of speed-solving? It's gross.
It's gross.
I have not checked.
I don't like
checked.
It.
Let me check.
I'm not going to be logging on to speed solving for quite some time. It's just, I can't get over it.
Speed solving.
It's kind of gross to me.
Yeah. Corin, have you seen what it looks like?
I just looked at it, but I don't think I ever looked at it before it changed, so, yeah.
Like, to be honest, like,
go
I...
Go here.
The changes... Like, I'm so freaking old, man. Like, when I first started, like, it looked nice. I liked it. And then they changed it, and I didn't like it. Then I grew to like it, and then now they changed it again, and now I just don't like it.
This is just a huge change.
It is a huge change, but it looks so weird. I don't like it.
I
hate change.
I think that
it looks.
I don't know. As a mod, I have all these tools at my fingertips a lot more accessible. like the tools that I need in order to do my do my job, it's just a lot easier. However, the actual look of the thing, I think the text is a bit, I don't know.
It looks weird. It just looks weird. It's going to take some time to get used to, but actually, like, now that I'm navigating around it, it's actually pretty easy. I take that back. PJK, good job.
Good job, okay. That was a pretty quick change.
I take
of
it back.
There, well.
Yeah, and actually, like, it, to me, the colors of the background looks gross. The colors that they're using as a scheme look absolutely gross. But in terms of usability, it actually looks more usable. It's the exact same thing as last time, except it looks just a little bit more usable. But now we don't have the old homepage, do we?
All right, so Speed Solving Forums upgraded to Zen 4.0. This is a massive change to Speed Solving's new look. In the past year, PJK, the sysadmin of Speed Solving, implemented the new homepage, which has a bunch of articles. Actually, in the recent past, I posted some of the episodes from CubeCast, CubeCast proper, and the Halfcast on there. So they're direct links to CubeCast.fm. I'm trying to get it so that they open in a new window, so you don't have to leave Speed Solving. Or I'm gonna have to work with it a little bit. So we'll figure that out in the next week.
So our next topic is Hawaiian speed cubing prodigy Michael Humuhumu Nuku Nuku Apua'a. He had a video debut on March 31st, which is him. It was kind of like a build-up. He did three solves, like, all under sub-6. And the important one here... he's competing. Yeah. He's competing at Manhasset Spring 2016.
In a week.
Yep, in a week from this episode. We're probably going to be releasing it the day before he competes, which is going to be really, really exciting. But yeah, keep an eye out for that guy. On top of that, he apparently has a cube designed, the Xiaowei Pineapple, available during his debut, which is interesting. So, any thoughts on Michael?
I think it's really interesting that somebody who's in complete isolation has progressed so much under the radar. And that the cubicle.us of all places was able to reach out to him, or I don't know if he reached out to them, or I don't know what the whole process was, but he's now like this is big news, almost bigger than the giant Rubik's cube. That was a joke. Should I leave?
God, you're horrible.
Should I leave again? But to have him going to this competition and competing, we'll see if he's really all that everybody thinks that he should be. So,
but it do? Question mark? But it do? Question mark?
All right. Corin, have you seen this video?
But yeah,
I have seen this video.
What'd you think?
You know, lovely shots of Hawaii, I guess. And not a whole lot else to say, I guess. Can't wait.
So keep your eyes on Cube Comps next week for Michael Humuhumu Nuku Nuku Apua'a's grand debut in the competitive scene. All right, and now we're gonna move to some results. So first, we have a 2x2 single world record of 0.49. By Mitch, you want to try this one?
Note to self: Mitch groans every single time he attempts to pronounce a name.
Maciej Chapiewski.
That's about as well. As
Polish name that starts with M. Oh. There you go.
I'm gonna try the scramble really quick.
It's really fun.
It looks like this.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is dumb.
What'd you get?
I picked up the cube, and then I dropped it, and then I picked it up again, and then I did three moves.
So you got a plus two?
No, I did the first move, then I dropped the cube, and then I did three more moves.
What was your time?
I didn't even time it.
Okay, well, then I guess you gotta be enough. So, this 0.49 single is another one of those four-move solutions that are so popular. People love when they get them. Other notable results from that competition were a 0.52 single by Michał Żywuski, who's in second in the world, Europe and Poland, for more than just 2x2 single now. There's a 0.63 single, a 0.7 single, a 0.72, a 0.86, and a 0.91. And those are all the sub 1 singles, all for that same scramble. What do you guys think about 2x2 single, besides the fact that it's ridiculously fast and, you know, requires an immense amount of luck?
It's kind of not trying to make fun of the people who get these records and who take the event seriously, but 2x2 single is almost as big as a joke as some of your puns.
So, pretty good joke.
Yeah.
No.
It's kind of, like, to be honest, it's something we've observed and something that we should no longer expect. Kind of deal.
Okay.
But yeah, it's weird. Congrats to everyone who got a sub point. I guess I should just say who got a sub one. Like, it's great.
It's great.
It's great.
I don't know. It just makes me mad that 80% of these people's solves is picking up the cube. That's like pretty. It just makes me like absolutely mad.
Starting the timer is a significant amount of the solve. Corin, what do you think about this half a second solve?
I'd say, you know, congratulations to everyone who you know, went to that competition with the competence required to do four moves in under a second, you know.
Yeah.
Way to not waste.
I wasn't trying to be insulting.
Way to not waste an opportunity. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good way to be not insulting.
Yeah.
And kind of just put him down. Okay, great. I like it.
No.
I mean, I don't think that's so much of a put down as it is like it's great that you are able to see this and, you know, do it. Because I know that there are other people who might have seen it and were not able to do it. And other people who wouldn't have seen it but definitely could have done it.
Congratulations on four moves! Oh my god.
Congrats on four moves.
Yep.
Alright. Should we move on?
God damn it, Brandon!
Congrats on four moves. Alright.
And we shall move on.
Moving on to Multiblind, something that is not 2x2 single.
Finally.
Yeah. Multiblind is getting a lot more competitive. I talked to Mark Boyanowski on a regular basis, and he's wicked good. He's just, like, insanely good. Let's go through these in order. So there's a 26 out of 26 in 5720 by Gianfranco Juanqui on Valentine's Day. It was second in the world at the time. It's now fourth in the world. About a month and a week later, like five or 6 weeks later, Shivam Bansal at the Indian Nationals got 25 out of 27 in 5707. Fifth in the world at the time and now seventh in the world. The following day, the 26th of March, 31 out of 32 in 5827 by Mark Boyanowski. Second in the world at the time, now third in the world. Because on the following day, Kaijun Lin, on the 27th of March, got 30 out of 30 in 58.11, 16 seconds faster than Mark, and is now second in the world. It should be noted also that Mark and Kaijun are the second and third people in the world to officially achieve 30 points for multi-blind in competition. And the only other person, of course, is Maskov, who's got, you know, 41 out of 41 in 58.14, just 3 seconds. Basically, for Kaijun's second in the world, it's 30 out of 30 in 58.11. Maskow tacked on 11 additional cubes in only 3 more seconds. What do you guys think about this? Like, multi-blind is, like, I don't think that anybody has really cared as much about multi-blind until now, or at least nobody's gotten super, super good at it. What do you guys' thoughts?
It's really interesting to see improvements in Multiblind. I think, like, to be honest, I feel like Maskov scared everyone away.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
But, like, seeing, like, Mark and Kaijin, like, actually doing really, really awesome, I think Maskov should start practicing again. Like,
Colin, you wanted to say something?
Well, you know, 30 out of 30, like, it's not... I could see within a year, Kaijin Lin being able to, you know, tack on another 11 cubes or something, get the world record. Like, it didn't seem like it took Maskov that long to go from 30 points to 40 points, so we could see a world record in next year or two. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know some stuff that Mark's been doing at home, and it's scary. And I'm thinking that Kaijin's doing a very similar thing, I would assume, and Gianfranco not too far behind. Mitch, do you have any thoughts on this?
I don't know much about Multiblind, so not really, no.
And so no FMC, no Multiblind. What are you doing, Mitch? Are you even a cuber?
Yeah, why?
God damn it, Mitch.
All right, so congratulations to all those people on doing actually crazy amazing things with tons and tons of cubes in their memory.
That's so much, like, it's mind-blowing because they're definitely doing more than four moves, and it's great. Like, definitely congratulations.
A lot more than four moves. Congrats to all of you for doing more than four moves.
God damn it. I feel really bad, like, talking about this. Like...
So, now for some closing notes. We had a giveaway that was posted on our Facebook page, but at the release of the Jeremy episode, so 2 weeks ago we posted this now, and we had a whopping 14 entries, woohoo, to win a $15 gift card to CubeCon.us, and a $10 gift card to CubeCon.us, and so all the people have been put into this randomizer thingy, and I'm going to generate the $10 winner first. Should I do $10 winner or a $15 winner first?
Ten.
So the $10 winner is Roy Lee. Congratulations to you. And the $15 winner is Ray Renaissance. All right.
Great.
So if you, congratulations to both of you. And if you, since you now heard your name, assuming you listened to the episode. Please get in contact with us, and we will get you those codes, those gift codes to thecubicle.us, and thanks so much to thecubicle.us for supporting us yet again.
Absolutely. Speaking of not four moves, our next... I guess we should end the episode on a good note. Isn't that right, Brandon?
Yeah.
a classic, maybe? What are you thinking?
I don't know. Korn, are you up to this?
No.
Okay, great. Because he said no, he's going to be calling our best favorite thing ever. Skype Team Blind.
Do you actually not want to do it?
I guess I could. I don't know.
Alright, so for all the listeners at home, I'm going to call out the scramble really quick. It is back L2, U2, R2, F, L2, back 2, F prime, down 2, back, F2, L prime, U2, R, down, U2, back prime, down, F, down 2. And your cube should look like this.
Okay, you're going to have to repeat that. Oh, wait, why am I asking you to repeat it? It's right on my screen. God damn.
Oh, my God.
I have to solve my cube real quick.
Oh, man.
Can you...
Pretty much just start in the orientation of Scramble, I guess.
Okay, great.
Cool. Yeah.
Easy. So I'm going to put on a blindfold. All right. And whenever you're ready.
Okay. D, R2, F prime, L, F, U prime, F, U prime, L prime, U, L,
B L prime B prime L F prime U prime F two U F prime. R, U prime, R prime, U, R prime, U2, R, U2, R prime, U, R, F prime, U, F, U prime, R, U, F prime. F R U R prime U prime F prime U R U two R prime U prime R two U prime R two U two R R U prime R U R U R U prime U prime again R two U prime R U prime R U R2 oh crap R okay I messed it up damn it
oh no
no no my Rubik's no. Cube
oh okay forget no. It
oh, DNF in 250 oh man okay I have a 2x2x3 off by one move
yeah
what do y'all have
I had F2L done
you had F2L done
I had yeah. Two pairs
two pairs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I misheard something, but I have F2 all done.
Yeah, maybe the Skype call cut out.
Something.
I don't know.
But yeah, that was great, actually. Thank you for calling very, very slowly and very concise.
Yeah.
Because I can't keep up with people like Jeremy.
Jeremy wasn't even that fast.
Anyway. I know. But, all right, yeah. So
thank you so much, Corin, for being on the show. We really appreciate it, and we appreciated your commentary on what it's like being a puzzle designer, and for congratulating all these people on their four moves.
Yeah. Yeah, way to go, guys. Sub one, two, sub one.
This is so bad.
Yeah.
All right, and I guess we'll catch you later.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. So, our final words, everyone? Do you have any final words?
No potato. Such is life.
Mitch?
The cake is a lie.
And my nice final words is, dude, we should have an ice cream eating race right now. All right, well, thank you for listening.
Yeah, if you want to send us anything at all, go ahead and email us at ranja@cubecast.fm or wafo@cubecast.fm or mitch@cubecast.fm. And stay tuned to our Facebook page at facebook.com/cubecastpodcast or to our thread, which has a new URL. So stay tuned for that. It'll probably be posted on our Facebook page, honestly. Yeah, until next time.
Four moves later.
Good. Cut.
See ya.